Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. They tape every morning, Monday through Friday, live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in the very best analysis in the game, or if you're just ashamed of how you did in your league last year. You can download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about LeBron getting ring number 4. We're going to talk about the NFL, trying to figure out how to stay open in the midst of COVID, and your stories on when you quit playing football. But first... All right, man, a whole lot of y'all know I got a viewing rule that I adopt and deal with when it comes to watching football, sports, whatever it is, man. Gabe, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but this is something I'm kind of rigid about as best as I can be. I don't do catastrophic injuries. You know what I'm saying? Like, once I hear that somebody has suffered a catastrophic injury, I'm not seeking it out. I'm not trying to look. If I get some kind of indication that there has been a catastrophic injury, nope, I'm good. I don't need that, right? I just don't need that in my life. Like, I think about some of the more noteworthy catastrophic injuries over the years. I'd be like, nope, didn't see it. Remember that dude, Kevin Ware, who played for Louisville, broke his leg on the floor? Didn't see it. Paul George? Didn't see it. Didn't see it. Gordon Hayward kind of saw it. I'm like, oh, why is he on the ground? And then Kevin Harlan said, Hayward broke his leg. Oh, no need for me to watch that, right? Like, once you tell me, I don't need. Like, once the announcers give me a hint, that this is something that I don't really need no parts of? Nah, man, I'll never forget. When I was in seventh grade, I went to school with this kid, and this is, to this day, the most gruesome injury I've ever seen. We were just playing football in PE. And I just remember my dude was laying on his stomach, right? And you know how you lay on the ground and your feet, like, flay out to either side? They were both going the same way. Same way. Right. And they said they called his dad. His dad came out there, and his dad was like, in typical Texas fashion, well, all right, well, I'll just put him in the back of the truck and take him to the hospital. No, you will not. You will not do that. We will be calling an ambulance, sir. Your do-it-yourself spirit is noteworthy, but no, we ain't going to do that. I don't do that. I wound up catching a glimpse of that Dak Prescott, though, right? Like, Dak was going for that first down. He went forward. I don't know how exactly his foot got caught or whatever, but I do remember he sat there and he pointed at the ground, like pointed at his leg. And as he's pointing at his leg, I'm like, whoa, why is it looking like that? Time to turn away. Oh, I'm out of here. Said it was the compound fracture. That's the one that come out your skin. And he was there. They say he's going to be out for 4 to 6 months. And, you know, catastrophic football injuries, they take us all to so what I say are some very interesting places. Like, we don't all even necessarily know what to do in those times when those injuries happen, in part because I think that we all watch football with a certain measure. Is guilt the right way to put it? Because I feel like guilt is a fairly appropriate phrase to use in this. And what I mean is, we understand that this is ridiculous, like as a game and as a notion in all of this stuff. We realize that this is bananas. And by and large, I think that most of us realize that we would not do this. For who? For what? Like, I had a thread about Tyrod Taylor that I had done the other day, and I was just talking about the hard luck that he's had in his career, starting from Virginia Tech, going all the way up to here, right? Like, I mean, and when you go back to Virginia Tech, you look at it, you're like, damn, man, my dude can't even catch a break, you know? And so I talked about all the stuff, and then I got to the end, and I'm like, you get to the point talking about the dude had a cracked rib and was trying to play through it, and he was trying to get a shot to numb the pain, and he punctured his damn lung. And now my man can't play no more. You know, he loses his job to Justin Herbert, which we saw on Monday night, understandably. But, you know, that was the thing that happened. And I had people hit me back, and they was like, well, he did make $54 million. I mean, if you don't shut your broke ass up. Like, I mean, and I don't mean to do that to y'all on that one. But I ain't going to lie. I was probably more inclined to talk like that when I was broke, right? I ain't broke no more. And so, and this is the key part of this. And this is where I'm like, I mean, I sound very harsh and judgmental when I tell you to shut your broke ass up. But this is the truth. After you get yourself what most people would consider to be a lot of money, the first thing that you're going to realize, the first thing that you're going to recognize is that it don't make you no happier. Like that's why, like, you know, it's somebody broke who immediately jumps up and is like, but he made all that money. Because if you got some of that money, you have already learned that it doesn't make you any happier. Like, you'd rather have the money than not. And there are all kinds of pragmatic reasons that you would want to have the money. But the money is not going to make you happier. The money is no different than when you make some like splurge purchase to make you feel good in a moment. And then you go back to whatever the hell your life was right before it, right? Like, once that money gets you into a place of comfort, right? Like, once you had a place where you can take care of all the things that you used to stress about, then you just realize the stuff just didn't go make you like any happier, right? So people just point to, oh man, you know, $54 million, you got this. And the point I tried to make about that though was, every other way that exists to make $54 million is a better way to make $54 million than playing football. Period. That's it. Like, in theory, you could sell dope and make $54 million, but you're going to go to jail before that. You know, like there's a couple survivors of the fittest that get to the end, but you're going to probably go to jail and get killed before you get yourself to a place of $54 million, right? Like, you go ask the investment bankers or the football players, would you rather make $54 million working at a desk, or would you rather make $54 million where your leg might bend out sideways? I bet you want to work at a desk. You know, it's just a guess. Like, playing football is cool and everything like that, but it's a hard way to make a living, man. It's a lot of people out here, by the way, that ain't making $54 million, and they just come out here with all the injuries and all the pain or anything else. But the point I'm making is, I think that people jump out there with that, yeah, but he makes $54 million, because that's part of the guilt that I think a lot of us feel in watching football, knowing that there's just kind of something implicitly exploitative about the whole idea of watching these people literally endanger their lives and us watching it for entertainment. And you can be like, oh, man, well, ain't too many of them cats actually going to die. But the endangerment of their lives is not necessarily like a short-term thing. It's not necessarily an immediate thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a long-term thing that goes up and down the line. Like, Alex Smith came back and played this weekend, and I sent a tweet that said, I'm paraphrasing because I don't feel like looking it up, but I was like, I feel like there's two kinds of people watching Alex Smith right now. And it's people who think this is a feel-good story, and it's people who kind of want to vomit. And I was surprised at how many people were angry at me. Like, why are you being negative? What are you talking about? Like, why am I being negative? Even his wife, who thought that was a feel-good story, probably damn near wanted to vomit. Watch him out there. Like, yo, all the things that we saw, the documentaries about Alex Smith's leg, we've seen all the pictures, everything else. But another one, by the way, Gabe, that I did not see live, right? Like, all the things that we saw and dealt with Alex Smith, and now this dude got to come out here behind that offensive line and dealing with Aaron Donald. Yes, it was a bit uncomfortable to watch. Yes, I acknowledge the level of guilt that comes from me, and I, again, believe for a lot of the rest of you, in watching a guy that you're not even sure is going to be able to defend himself in those circumstances, so dedicated to coming back to playing this ridiculous game. Like, yeah, I was kind of like, girl, like, what are we doing in sum total? You have somebody, well, if you got a problem with Alex Smith, don't you have a problem? And then add it like this whole list of other people. Like, why aren't you saying nothing about them? Because they're not the ones on my television right now. You know, they're not the ones that had, what was it, 17 surgeries on his leg in order to get him back. Like, no, man, like, watching football is, I mean, there's just kind of a lot that comes to it. And then when you get to a dude like Dak, it goes to a different place because of the money, right? Now let's be clear. He's going to make $31 million this year. And as catastrophic as that injury is, if he never makes another dime from playing football, I mean, $31 million is a pretty good deal, you know? Again, that kid I went to school with, he broke his leg like that for free. You know, so I'm like, it's not like Dak's going to be poor. It'll be disappointing if he doesn't wind up breaking the bank for like $100 million guaranteed contract on the back end. And by the way, I think he's still going to get that money. Because one thing we have to remember when we watch injuries is how bad it looks is not the same as how bad it is. Like, how painful it is in that moment is not the same as what the long-term effects are ultimately going to be. Like, I don't think, based on my limited knowledge of the medical science here, I don't think that this is a thing that Dak Prescott's never going to be able to come back from. You know, and I also don't think, like, we're not talking about Michael Vick or Lamar Jackson in terms of his need to be mobile. It's not that. I also saw Michael Vick break his ankle once. It didn't look as bad, obviously, to the naked eye as it did there. But Michael Vick broke his fibula in that preseason game in 2003, and he came back later that year and looked the exact same. That Paul George injury that y'all have told me is one of the worst that y'all have ever seen. Larry Bird's thing was, hey, if he can play, he's going to play. You know, like, how bad it looked and how bad it was are not necessarily the same thing. But there is something that's just kind of outright awful about the idea that they were still haggling over that money, and then this is what happened in the meantime, tween time, that his leg gets destroyed. Now, it's going to be weird to watch what happens, because even with Andy Dalton at quarterback, the Cowboys can win that division. They still can. And who knows? Andy, look, Gabe, you know this. Who gonna trick themselves into giving Andy Dalton a boatload of cash if the Cowboys win the division? Like, I feel like Andy Dalton, all they got to do is not wet himself, and somebody going to be dumb enough to be like, yep, looks like a starter again.
I sure as hell hope it's not the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, y'all already got Andy Dalton, just a, like, better-looking version. I tried to tell you, didn't I? Didn't I try to tell you, Gabe? Didn't I try to warn you about that dude?
Yes, you did.
I just want everybody to know, when people thought I was just hating on Jimmy Garoppolo, no, he's actually just not that good. Like, and it's kind of going on now in a much different way, obviously, because he's a rookie, but with Herbert. Like, I watched Herbert play that game against the Saints. I think that's the first time I'd really sat and watched him. And he's got all the tools, but Justin Herbert's head don't really move. Like, he drops back, and he's like, oh, man, I think this guy's going to be open. And if he's not, I don't even know who else is out here. Like, he's getting to the line, he's making that read off the snap, and he's going, and it's cool, it's just that's the kind of thing that catches up to you. You know what I mean? So he is able to do some incredible things as it goes right now, but I think with Herbert, he looks better and the numbers are better than he has actually been, if that makes sense. You know, and that's what happens all the time in football. And it happens all the time in football because the announcers root for the quarterbacks overwhelmingly. And just as long as you complete a pass, the announcers are down for it. And in watching football, I think that most viewers are more dependent on the announcers for expertise than they are in other sports. Like, you don't really need a baseball color man to explain to you what just happened. Yes, that was a curveball. Yes, that looked hard to hit. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need somebody to tell you that. Basketball, somebody can tell you that, but you can understand the game well enough, like, kind of sort of without it. Football, we lean on the color commentator to tell us what is going on in these plays, where it was supposed to go, you know, all of those things. Like, that's where we wind up. And as long as a dude completes a pass, they're not really hitting you so much with that many examples of, well, if you'd thrown it to the ball right there, it would have been better. Like, okay, it's cool that he completed that, but this is what he missed. Like, you only give it so much. People are just like, hey, he just keeps completing passes and moving the ball down the field. You know, that's where you wind up in that situation with, like, a lot of these guys. But Andy Dalton is going to be interesting because he got guys to throw to. Like, you saw those catches Gallup made at the end of that game. Like, you got dudes to get the ball to. They could ultimately wind up being okay. And I think that Dak is ultimately going to be okay. And I think that Dak is ultimately going to be the Cowboys quarterback next year because they just don't have any better option. Like, maybe there's a chance that Jerry loses his mind and runs a Cody Carlson. You know who Cody Carlson is?
No. This sounds familiar, though.
Yeah. No reason for you to, just to be clear. Cody Carlson played college football at Baylor and then was drafted by the Oilers while Warren Moon was there. And any glimmer of hope that they ever had to get Cody Carlson in the game, to get Cody Carlson the job, they was here for it.
Kyle Allen type situation.
Yes.
But in
yes.
Texas with a Texas quarterback.
Yes. In Texas with a Texas quarterback and Warren Moon. Like, I guess Cam is kind of a similar example to Warren Moon, obviously. But one year, Warren got hurt, like, going into the postseason. And Cody came in and had a good game. Man, that newspaper the next week, there was a whole spread. Commander Cody, right? Like, they were just all over it. Couldn't wait. The Oilers traded Warren Moon in 1994 to give the job to Commander Cody. You know how much longer Warren Moon played in the NFL after that? Warren Moon played, I want to say, another 9 years.
Oh, no.
Yes. Warren left the Oilers at the end of 93 and he didn't retire until the end of 2000, okay? And, by the way, made three more Pro Bowls after they traded him. Cody Carlson got the job in 1994. Let's look up how many games Cody Carlson played, okay? In 1994, Cody Carlson played in five games. After that season, Cody Carlson retired.
No.
They ran Warren Moon off for five games of Cody Carlson. And listen to who started the rest of them games. Bucky Richardson, which doesn't mean anything to you, but Texans remember Bucky Richardson. He just went to Texas A&M. He was, in a way, kind of like a proto Taysom Hill. Not that he did all the things that Taysom Hill does, but a quarterback that people want on the team so bad that he plays on special teams. Like, that's what they did with Bucky Richardson. And then Billy Joe Tolliver. I want you to note, by the way, Gabe, and you would not know this, all three of those guys are Texas quarterbacks. Like, they just went out and got a bunch of white dudes from Texas.
This sound like a bunch of white dudes from Texas.
Yes, Cody, Bucky, and Billy Joe. Yes, that is exactly what happened, because they wanted to get him out of there. Now, I don't think that Jerry is going to do that with Dak Prescott, because one thing that we do have to note about Warren at that point is that he was old. You know, he played forever, but he was an older quarterback at that time. They were kind of tearing down the whole thing. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that went on there, but still, they wanted Cody Carlson to be the quarterback. I actually, contrary to what other people say, I think the Cowboys want Dak Prescott to be the quarterback. I just think they want to be able to do it without expending too much capital on him. And they thought that they could run the game on him, that if you take a little less, then we can give you more money for more weapons and everything else. And Dak Prescott's like, son, I can't eat them weapons. I just can't believe that they're so dumb that they would take a quarterback that age who has been that good and think that they can just go find another one with a team that's basically built to win now. Like, as poorly as they're playing, they're built to win now. I just don't think you're going to come back out here with like an Andy Dalton next year or try to draft the quarterback in the first round in order to make that happen. I personally just do not see that happening, right? I think they want him to be the starter. I don't think this injury is going to like derail his career totally. I think he's going to wind up being the quarterback for many years for the Dallas Cowboys. Like, these are the things that I absolutely believe. But the variable here is, it's because I think they want him. It's because I think they want him to be the quarterback. We look at what's happening in Washington, and if it wasn't clear to you before now, it should be abundantly clear to you now. The reason Dwayne Haskins ain't starting is because they just don't want him to start. Like, apparently, one of the reporters that covers Washington, a.k.a. the team, asked Rivera about Haskins, and he said, I saw enough. Like, that's a wild thing to say about a dude that's 22, 23. Just, I'd seen enough. And we're starting to get the reports now about, like, Haskins and his work habits and, you know, the team having problems with those. And these are, like, I guess accusations is the right word, but they were saying it last year, too, right? That there's a level of growing up that he needs to do that he has not done yet. But it is so wild to me that you just got this job and you're already like, yeah, I'm done. You put Kyle Allen out there. Like, think about how crazy this is. They put Kyle Allen out there. Kyle Allen stunk. Then Kyle Allen hurt. Then they had to, like, endanger the health of Alex Smith, if at least it felt like, you know, put him out there. He stunk. Kyle Allen was cleared to return. They left Alex Smith out there, but still say that it's Kyle Allen's job. Neither of those dudes was any better than Haskins had been up until this point. Neither of them was. They just don't want him to be the quarterback. Simple as that. They just don't want it because there is no plausible football reason. There is no reason to expect improvement from Kyle Allen. There certainly is no reason to expect improvement from Alex Smith. They just don't want him to be the quarterback, period. He's done in that town. I don't know what other town he's going to get in. And I also want to be clear, I don't think he's good, period, at least right now. But I'm not betting on Dwayne Haskins. But the same thing happened in Washington with Griffin. Jay Gruden didn't want him to be the quarterback, period. And you can look at the ways that they handled him when he did play, the way the offense would change when he wasn't out there. When Robert was playing that first year under Gruden, and then they went to Cousins, the second year, the year they finally got him off the job. But you'd be like, wow, what happened? Where were all these screen passes? when Robert was out here. All these easy throws, like, where were they? And Robert had his problems, right? Like, I don't blame him for deciding they wanted to move on. But the truth is, their coach took that job and probably told them that he liked the quarterback that the owner liked. And then got the job and was like, nah, no, I don't. I'm good. And that seemed to be what's happening to Haskins. But that's not what's happening to Prescott. You know, so like as terrible as it was and how you hope he gets better and they did the surgery and everything else, I don't feel like we're talking about a dude that's never going to play for the Dallas Cowboys again. I just don't think that's going to be it. And I actually have heard some people try to make the argument that there's some blessing in disguise from going to Andy Dalton. This is how I feel about a situation like that with Andy Dalton. I don't know if you've ever seen this episode of The Simpsons, Gabe, because it's from season one, which was, you know, before you were born. Wow. But the family goes and decides they want to buy an RV because Flanders had bought a fly RV. And now they decide they want to go get an RV and they get in there. And now it's time to run the credit check. But it's Homer Simpson's credit. And they run the credit check. And then the siren goes off of the computer. And Homer says, is that good? And the guy says, have you ever known a siren to be good, Mr. Simpson? That's how I feel about Andy Dalton. Like, I think the homie Booger was on TV talking about how Andy Dalton, like, it was a good, you know, like, hey, it might be a good thing to have Andy Dalton out there. Has having Andy Dalton out there ever been a good thing, Mr. McFarland? Like, that's how I feel about this. That's how I feel about this. And again, Andy Dalton is capable. Out of all the backup quarterbacks in the league that I think are legit backup quarterbacks, like, not just a young guy buying his time or something like that, right? Out of the backup quarterbacks I've seen, I'd say Andy Dalton would be my second choice after Jameis. And the reason Jameis is my number one choice is, yeah, Jameis might go out there and lose you a game, but I think Jameis is the only backup quarterback in the league who can go out there and win you a game. You know, he can win you a game. But no, man, Cowboys, I do think they want Dak to be the quarterback. And they just can't beat us, dude. I mean, and I understand the NFL teams just don't give a damn at all about how things look. But can you imagine how that would look if they send Dak Prescott packing for Andy, an old version, like, I can't even say an old version of Cody Carlson. Cody Carlson was 31 years old when they gave him that damn job, acting like he was young, gay. You know, like no, I can't see that. Like, that's part of what gets me about Washington. Don't y'all know how this looks? Like, do you have any idea how, again, I say this to somebody who's critical of Haskins. Do you have any idea how this looks, especially given how it went the last time you had the black quarterback? And this also, by the way, Gabe, remember when people were telling me to celebrate the black man getting the president job with Washington, and they didn't understand why it was that I wasn't happy that they just got a black dude, right? This is why I didn't care about that. What's happening right now, okay? Now, you can make the argument, and it's been said, well, that guy's not going to have anything to do with football operations. Okay, but a management core at a company, even if you're not speaking on football operations, you tug people's coats, right? Be like, hey, you know, something we might want to think about with this matter. And so Rivera has made the call on how it is that he wants to play it with Haskins. If the black man in charge is really the black man in charge, and if having the black man in charge actually matters, the black man in charge at least goes and talks to Rivera and says, hey, man, I think we need to talk about the messaging on this. You know, we got to at least say that we are giving this dude a chance. He's young. There's time for him to get better. You know what I mean? But we just can't toss him out like that. It's not going to look good for us if we do this. It doesn't sound like that has happened. And if the black man in charge can't say anything about football operations, then why do any of us care? We care about football operations. We care, obviously, about the terrible things that seem to be happening at that organization, right? But we don't care about business operations, like in a macro. It takes something real salacious to get us over there and care about that. We don't care about how many season ticket packages they sell or suites or none of like that. We don't give a damn about none of that stuff. But we care about the football operations. And these are the things that we notice. And these are the things that we see, you know? And to me, they should have just had an idea of how this looked and just been like, no, we need to talk about how we're going to sell this to the public. You know, and apparently they didn't do that. Jerry generally don't be caring about that kind of thing. Generally doesn't. But I do think that Jerry cares about winning football games. And I really can't think of any time that I felt like the Cowboys have made a decision at the expense of football. Keep it in mind, Jerry loves Tony Romo and put him on the oak when Dak took that job, which, by the way, I would not have done. You know, me and Dominique were only two people. Like, yo, man, I think that you should go back to Tony Romo. Nope, Jerry went to Dak, you know? So on some level, there's an affection, right? Like on some level, there's a belief. They have invested in this and they have made it work. It's the most prescient draft pick that Jerry has ever made. You know, he got saved from himself. He wanted to draft Paxton Lynch and he wound up with Dak. It worked out well. And so I think Dak gonna wind up back being the quarterback. But it did not make it any less scary when he got hurt, right? But that was us reckoning with us as much as anything else. But I think he's gonna get his bread. I think he's gonna get his job. And then somebody's gonna get Andy Dalton. Whew, good luck to whoever you are. All right, Gabe, how you feeling?
I feel like a very magical and special thing happened the other day.
Yeah, how you feel, man? Your Lakers won a championship. First time they won a championship since he was a teenager. How you feeling, man? Is it good? Did you cry?
You know, the special feeling that I had that I'm still kind of getting over now is the intersection of being a favorite and an underdog at the same time.
Oh, explain.
It's a very unique feeling in sports. I wanted to ask you about this. Obviously, every team that like reaches the mountaintop, when they get there, they've always got their bulletin board material, right? That helped them kind of get there. But with the Lakers this year, there really were a lot of people saying that like LeBron was toast. LeBron was done. So he's been building that like bulletin board material for over a year now.
Yay.
But then going into the postseason, I mean, they were the favorites. It quickly went from being like, oh, the Clippers are going to win the chip, no doubt, to being like, oh yeah, LeBron and the Lakers, they're the favorites. They're steamrolling everyone. So to be able to feel like you had that superiority of having 16 rings and 16 banners, but then also being able to be like, nobody believed in us. Nobody believed in us. It was a fantastic feeling.
Okay, you let LeBron brainwash you into people saying he was done. Who said LeBron was done?
You know what? There actually have been a bunch of like clip reels doing the rounds on Twitter. You know, LeBron's toast. Clippers are going to win the chip.
Oh, Gabe, you're going full Laker fan. I haven't heard ever a single person say LeBron was toast. Now, this is what I do think about them in terms of like favorite underdog stuff. The Clippers gave them to work, it felt like, every time they played, right? Didn't they even have a game where I think Kawhi didn't play or Paul George didn't play and it was close and the Lakers won, but it was still like a close game?
Yeah, there's reason to believe that the Clippers would work them again.
Yeah, and the Clippers, it felt like, had more good players. Like, the Lakers had LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and that is superior to having Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, right? Like, there's just kind of no way around that. I think some people tricked themselves into believing otherwise on that one because they got a little carried away with Kawhi last year. And, you know, it's just cool to get all something new, and those guys were the something new, and LeBron is obviously not the something new because he's been doing this for 17 years. Like, I guess maybe I can't extrapolate too much from how I felt and put that on to everybody else. I never thought LeBron was done. Like, that was never something that was a consideration in my mind.
But you were on to something a minute ago when you were talking about how, like, the Clippers clearly had better players, and I did not think throughout the year that the Lakers were going to win.
No, I know
that the Clippers were going to win. So going into that postseason and feeling like, you know, as a team, you're not going into it, not everyone at least, is going into it with that Lakers superiority where it's like, oh yeah, we're going to roll to the chip.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we'll see what happens.
That's a new feeling for you guys, right? Because either it was like, we're going to win the championship, or, you know, we've been sorry for 7 years. But no, like, they like this was like a new place, and you got there, and they got it done. And in the year that we lost Kobe, you know, like, good for Lakers fans. Like, I really do, you know, I've been antagonizing you guys for acting like a bunch of losers. And now you don't have to do that because you're not losers anymore. You are winners. Like, I'm trying to think of how many teams ever missed the playoffs 6 years in a row and then won a championship in that next year. I also think people need to be honest about this, man. They're going too far and working too hard to trying to figure out who to give credit to. Like, Lakers fans, you guys sure came around on Rob Pelinka fast. I remember when you guys hated him. Now all of a sudden people talk about Rob Pelinka. That man should be the executive of the year. You know what Rob Pelinka did? Rob Pelinka said, you can have whatever you want. Just give us back Anthony Davis. And I mean, it was a great decision, but I feel like a decision that I could have and would have made. Like, I don't feel like I feel like it's a decision that Magic was there to make. I didn't see anything happen this season that Magic couldn't do or, like, didn't, in effect, do, right? Magic, obviously was the guy that was there when they signed LeBron. I don't think it mattered who the GM was, but Magic was there when they signed LeBron. A lot of those guys that they packaged in order to get Anthony Davis, Magic was involved in getting them, right? Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, you know, like Magic was involved in making that happen. Your man, Playoff Rondo, isn't that Magic's work? I guess Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rich Paul brought him in. You guys made a turn on him too.
Hey, you know what? He's one of us.
Hey, look, I'm all good with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I ain't never heard of a dude showing up to play basketball on house arrest. Like, I could never tell if that picture of him with the ankle bracelet on was a Photoshop. If it was, I hate that it was. I would have liked it a lot more if it would have been like an actual, like, that. I mean, that'd have been, that's keeping it real right there. You know, but they got them in. They won the championship because they had LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And a very specific part of that was because we've seen LeBron be excellent similarly to how he was excellent in this postseason before, right? I have never seen Anthony Davis play that well. Like, Anthony Davis and the way that his game has now legitimately extended to the three-point line, what he is, and I mean this in an extremely positive way, just to be clear before I say it, this is the next level of kind of like the Pippen evolution. Because Anthony Davis can be a number one player on a team. Like, I don't know what would happen if Anthony Davis had a number two with him that was of somewhat similar talent, you know what I mean? But he had a personality that worked well with being number two for LeBron this year. His game fit very well in a complimentary fashion. He doesn't need to be the guy to dictate the offense necessarily. And then he does all those other things, you know? But Lakers won a championship because they had two out of five best players in the league. Right there. Somebody tried to tell me, Gator, like, well, wasn't nobody saying Anthony Davis was a top five player before this? Yeah, that's why the Lakers traded the whole goddamn roster to get him. Really? You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. No, they won this because of that. This ain't about no executives. This is because LeBron James is that damn good, and LeBron James had the juice to basically trade for Anthony Davis and Rich Paul. How many of them on the team, Gabe, on the roster? How many of them?
Can you name them all?
Let me try. I think it's five or six, but I can name LeBron James, Anthony Davis, J.R. Smith, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and I think I'm missing one clutch client.
Missing a couple, actually.
Really? Who we got?
Dion Waiters.
Oh, yes.
We've got Talen Horton Tucker.
Who?
A clutch client. That's who it is. And we've got one Gabriel Bissain also.
You're signing with Clutch.
I'm on the team.
You're on the team.
Yeah, they gave me my flowers.
They had six or seven dudes with the same agency.
Yeah, I mean, it's a championship for Clutch. It's a championship for your boy, Rich Paul. It's unbelievable.
Rich Paul is like, look, you got to fill out that bitch with somebody, right? Does it really matter who? Like, it's kind of like the Celtics in the 80s. Red Auerbach had figured out. These dudes who don't play for the Celtics, who don't get any burn, they're going to be white, right? Like, people, the locals like that. We can sell more tickets just dressing white dudes up in Celtic suits, right? Boom, that's what we go do. And the Lakers are apparently like that with Clutch. They're just like, okay, cool. We'll just go get another Clutch guy. They gave Kentavious Caldwell-Pope once a $17 million one-year contract.
Unbelievable. When they had space in the cap, they're like, we'll do you a solid. Now, he better take a good deal now, let me tell you. Because we need that cap space to go out there and make some actual serious moves.
But this is the thing about that for me. LeBron was going to come to the Lakers anyway, right? Like, the Lakers are so desperate to get LeBron. And I don't blame them, but they were so desperate to get LeBron that they did all of this, and all the dudes play for one agency. This is hilarious. Like, we really didn't talk about this enough. Somehow, some way, we really didn't talk about.
I was thinking about it. You just weren't talking about it.
I know. My fault. How is Rondo not signed with Clutch yet?
I don't know, man. I mean, there honestly needs to be some like subscript underneath the Lakers logo that has like Clutch in kind of like light dark where you can just see the outline of it, but it's not actually like that quite visible.
You gotta let your eyes relax.
Is that the Clutch logo? I can't be sure.
Kind of like the Big Ten logo. back in the day when it used to have like an, you know, with the big, you know, the Big Ten used to have 10 teams and then they added Penn State, but they stayed the Big Ten, but they had 11 teams and they redid the logo. And if you looked at it right, it had an 11 outlined. That's what you need. It's kind of like that for the Cleety Clutch.
Like Fred X with the little arrow.
Yes.
Can we get a K in there?
Oh, man. I messed up and had a LeBron Jordan conversation on television yesterday. I didn't mean to, but Dan made me do it because Dan said we've never seen anybody, a basketball player better than LeBron. And I'm like, wow, he's doing a great job, but like, he's still not Michael Jordan. And you know that, of course, you know, turn into stuff. And it's no shade to LeBron. But I tell you this, it can feel very silly trying to argue that somebody's a better player than LeBron because LeBron is just so futuristic. Like I was talking to my man, Russ Bengston, covers sports and shoes and all these things. And he makes a fairly decent case for LeBron. My thing with Michael Jordan is at 6'6", 195 pounds, Michael Jordan completely disrupted the paradigm of NBA basketball from being a post-oriented league to being a wing-oriented league. And Isaiah Thomas won a championship without a Hall of Fame big. But Isaiah Thomas did not win championships with Will Perdue and like Bill Winnington and Bill Cartwright inside. The advanced metric case, I think, is on Jordan's side. I mean, I think it winds up being Jordan. What LeBron has and becomes a complicating issue on it is this crazy longevity that we've never seen before. But I personally, when I start talking about who's the greatest, I don't really make, longevity is not really where I make the argument. Like, if you want to talk about a certain level of consistency, that's fine. But longevity, I don't do that. I care more about peak. Like what you were in your peak is what we're going to talk about. Like, when people talk about how in the world is Tracy McGrady in the Hall of Fame, did you watch Tracy McGrady at his peak? That is how Tracy McGrady is in the Hall of Fame. I don't care what happened after the injuries or anything else. Tracy McGrady at his peak, that is what gets you into the Hall of Fame. So it gets Bob McAdoo in the Hall of Fame. It gets Bill Walton in the Hall of Fame. Like, there's something to be said for that. Derrick Rose, because his was basically just a year and change, is probably not going to make the Hall of Fame. But if Derrick Rose had put like had 2-3 more years in the neighborhood of the MVP year, I'd be putting Derrick Rose in the Hall of Fame too. Like, I think peak matters. Then wow, he did that for a long time. But what's complex, like, and in fact, the argument I made on television was, because my thing with LeBron now is he's got such an established body of work as it is. You're not changing my mind by winning a championship. You're not changing my mind by losing a series, you know? And it's not because it's just, I refuse to believe anybody's better than Mike. LeBron's been playing for 16, 17 years, you know? Like, I just think that we're in the place where whatever it is, there's only but so much of a change that can happen because of adding to the sample at this point. That's all it comes down to. However, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in his 16th season won finals MVP. And the argument I made on TV was, I didn't all of a sudden vault Kareem on the list of greatest players ever because he won a finals MVP at 38. You know, I didn't do that. But LeBron is so much better than Kareem was in his 17th season. Now, it's not an apples to apples because Kareem did 4 years of college, you know, so he was an older dude at that time or whatever it was. But what LeBron is in year 17, what he'll probably be in year 18 and 19, that is mind-blowing. Like, that is its own special, unique, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot situation. There's nothing to take away from it. There's no knocking it. And that's why I kind of hope we can get away from having to be like, we don't have to go all the way to the superlative case, right? Because once we go to the superlative case, now I do have to talk about Jordan. Once we go to that place, what he's doing is just simply incredible, period, right? He's annoyed the hell out of me in this bubble. Like, we've talked about that for a number of reasons. But if we're just talking about as a basketball player, he is that dude in a way that even when he came into the league, I don't think we could have possibly imagined it. I don't think we could have. And now, congrats to LeBron. I can't imagine how ready he was to get out that bubble, go home, go to his real barber, go under anesthesia, get whatever surgery is necessary to try to fill out his hair. Because, man, you know what LeBron's head looked like? It looked like when you wear out the knee in some jeans. He didn't buy them jeans with the holes in them. No, sir. He got it the old-fashioned way. He can't wait to go back to somebody who knows him. The back of his head looked like there was like a flower pot on the grass, and then you had to pick it up to mow the lawn, and then you look down, and you're like, oh, yeah, there's a circle right there. It had me getting no sunlight.
I know we went way long on this, but LeBron is going home now, and Bronny's waiting for him.
No. Bronny's not waiting for him. Bronny's at his friend's house. Bronny's like, Dad, can I come home tomorrow? I'm just really having a lot of fun. What do you mean you're in the drive? Whoa. Did you just open the door? Hey. I didn't have to let him in.
Do you think he tries to escape, or do you think he's like, okay, Dad's home, I'm going through the back door, or I'm just like going to wait in my room, close the door, and hope that he doesn't come this way?
Yeah, no, you just don't bring it up. You hope he forgot. It's been a while now. They won a championship since. Like, that's what you do. You are all on board with the congratulations, Dad. Congratulations. He's like, is Zuri going to come in? Congratulations. Thanks, baby girl. Bryce going to come in there. Way to go, Dad. Appreciate that, son. Bronny gonna come in. They said you couldn't do it, Dad. Yeah. That ain't all they said. All right, Gabe. So you've been seeing all these things going on with the NFL, and they done had to cancel all these, you know, postpone rather, because they ain't canceling nothing. Whew. But you know, the Titans had all them cases. And they had to figure that out. And the Titans were having the workout after they were told not to have the workout. And I understand why everybody's hammering on them for being selfish, but I also fully understand why they had that workout. Now, I think that people are being a little bit disingenuous in some of their finger wagging outrage. Because their thing is, do you realize how far we're getting set back by not practicing? Like, everybody else in the league is able to practice and we're not? Like, I can understand why they would try to find a way to get around it, that they would try to find a way. And I understand why everybody else is annoyed by it. But I also don't think people have been sincere about the stakes being what they are in this highly competitive world that they're in. Like we watch these dudes all offseason flout COVID regulations working out. You know what I mean? Like we've seen this for this whole time. Like I wasn't surprised that they went about it in the way they did. But I just want you guys to think about this for a second, because I think that we are looking at these COVID tests that they're doing in these leagues. And since we assume these guys are young and healthy and all this stuff, we're just like, damn, COVID test, can't play, shake it off, come back. I think that's just generally the approach that we've taken. And I think that by and large, what we've seen from professional athletes indicates that they are then able to come back. Now, I think we're going to find out later or down the line to some of these guys, like, had lost their senses of taste and smell, for example. You know, those kinds of things that we've read about happening. But these guys aren't going to be the ones to talk about it in public. You know, it's just going to be like, yo, I got to put my head down, keep going. Kendrick Nunn, it took him a while before he was back to looking halfway like he had before after having COVID-19. You know, so like, I think that for right now, as we watch sports, we're still watching sports. And when guys have COVID-19, we kind of are looking at it as an inconvenience. And not thinking about it in terms of what the consequences might be on this. And one of the things that we've talked about for a while and we don't know is the long-term consequences of this. So when the Big Ten didn't play, they had gotten their research, and I think some people have poked some legitimate holes in it, but about the myocarditis, the heart inflammation. And, you know, and that was one of the things that gave them great pause, like based on the presentation that they had received. I want you to, when you get a chance, go check out the New York Times. And on Sunday, there was a story that you should read. And the headline is, quote, "I feel like I have dementia," unquote, "brain fog plagues COVID survivors." And the subheadline is, "The condition is affecting thousands of patients, impeding their ability to work and function in daily life." And one of the things that's being reported with people who have this virus is that they're losing their memories. Like, they are really, really struggling to remember things. Like, there's one example in the story about a woman who had got caught like in the air and was like trying to talk about brushing her teeth and had to refer to her toothbrush as the thing you use to clean your teeth. You know, and these people are describing miserable conditions and circumstances, because this right here is like my greatest fear. Like, I personally, like, look, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I mean, I am me, and people think the things that they think about me and where my talents lie and what I am capable of, right? You know, like, this is not me trying to tell you that I am the smartest person in the world. This is me telling you, though, that we generally acknowledge, like, my brain is my ticket, right? And how quickly my brain works, that's what I got. That's what gets me to all the places that I need to be. That is my bag. That is what I do. If suddenly I couldn't do that anymore, Like suddenly, not some gradual, I'm just getting older and figuring it out, but suddenly I could not do that anymore. I don't know what I would do. Like, I have no idea, you know, like being able to pull, like I do the show, for example, like we pull any stats out or whatever. And Gabe, like, I think you notice this even more now that you watch me do the show all the time. I'm not working from notes, right? Like I'm just pulling these things. It terrifies me, the idea that I could contract this and then for who knows how long, not be able to do that anymore, you know? And they're talking about things way beyond that. Like, they're talking about people, like, you know, asking questions about people that have been dead for 30 years, not being able to go back and do their jobs. Like, this is one woman, when Miss Taylor, 31, contracted the virus in mid-June, she thought she'd only need a brief break from work as a lawyer for a nonprofit helping low-income tenants. But she became so disoriented that she washed her TV remote with her laundry and had to return a foster dog she'd recently taken in because she couldn't trust herself to care for a pet. One morning, quote, "Everything in my brain was white static," she said. "I was sitting on the edge of the bed, crying and feeling something's wrong. I should be asking for help, but I couldn't remember who or what I should be asking. I forgot who I was and where I was." By July, she thought she'd improved and told her boss she could return. But after another white static episode, she messaged him, quote, "I'm scared. I really want to get back to work, but I keep getting really tired and really confused." He suggested she rest and heal. She resumed working in early August, but her mind wandered and reading emails was, quote, like reading Greek, unquote, she said. By September, her employer urged a 13-week leave. Yeah. Yeah, guys. That is in a span of 2 months right there. There's still so much that can be going on. Like, and where it's going to be terrible, these football dudes. One of the things that came up in some of the concussion litigation, the NFL had some measure of plausible deniability on that. Because they were like, how do you know these are our concussions? How do you know these aren't high school concussions? How do you know these aren't college concussions? How can you put this on us? Which, by the way, is actually a fairly compelling point, right? Like, how can you say that these are our concussions? If this sort of thing that's happening to people is something that sticks around for a really long time, like, these dudes are going to have to fight and deal with enough with their heads and their brains and their bodies and everything else by the time this is all over. And I think that the NFL is doing what it can to protect players. I think that they don't have a plan, really, right? Like, I don't think they exactly know what they're doing in making this happen. They should have had a flow chart for every event that has taken place in the course of this. They had time to do that, and they have not, right? That on their end is indefensible. Their plan was, hope it goes well. You know, like, that's where they were going with this. But I'm thinking about this also with college, where Vanderbilt went out there with 56 scholarship players last week. That's 56 out of 85, and now they're not going to be able to play this week because they're just not going to have enough players in order to get this done. Like, just know, a lot of these guys who are going to contract this are going to be suffering from things that nobody's going to tell us about for a long time. Long time. Like, it's a tough world. It's real life. It's capitalism. It's all these things. People are going to have to incur some risk. And it's, by the way, not just the players, but also these coaches. You know, this is going to happen with them. But I just need y'all to understand that the stakes on this are ridiculously high. And in sports, as media, we are doing a terrible job in discussing broadly what the effects are of this virus and what the risks are that football players in particular are taking on in order to play. There may be a time that we look back at what is going on now. And in spite of what I said before about playing football, we got a general level of guilt. It is entirely possible that we're going to look back at this time period and we're just going to say this is one of the dumbest things we've ever allowed to happen. And again, I'm not really judging the people who have done it, because I understand what the stakes are, right? If you could find a way and you think you found a way, you're going to have to do it. But I am being real about it. There's a chance that we're going to have to come back and be like, at the very least, yeah, you know, in hindsight, right? Like, there's a chance that we're going to do this. But again, check out that story on the brain fog. Like, I was thinking about this. Gabe, have you ever had a problem with stuttering?
I haven't, no.
Okay, neither have I. But I asked that just because I think about, that's another one that I'm just like, the skills and talents that I have, if I were a stutterer, like, how much of my life is different if I would have to, like, adjust to the fact of stuttering? And I always have, I empathize with those people in a way, because I can't imagine if I couldn't form the words. Like, I just couldn't get the words out that I wanted to get out at a given point in time. That is a problem that I rarely, if ever, have, is just not being able to form the words. You know, like, that's rough. Now imagine it, you can't form the words, not because your mouth can't form them, but your brain can't. And that happened because you caught a virus. Stay safe, y'all.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Crime.
This is Shamini Joshi for Vice World News. Just when you thought 2020 was bad enough, a primate problem is killing dozens in India. Two separate gang wars between rivaling groups of monkeys in the last 4 months have left 7 people dead. While 2 people died last week after a monkey fight caused a wall to collapse on them, a similar incident in July led to the deaths of a mother and her 4 children after a troop of aggressive monkeys violently shook the wall beside them, crushing the family to death in their sleep. According to Ravi Kumar, a local monkey catcher, these gang wars are a result of monkeys fighting for their share of food. Primatologist Dr. Iqbal Malik, who's been studying monkey species in India for 4 decades, also told us that the aggression between monkeys and humans in India started around the late 80s as a result of both human and monkey populations growing. Authorities also bulldozed forests, their natural habitats, and farmers shifted to monoculture cultivations that made it harder for monkeys to find food. So, they strayed into human habitats, and now we have cases of them attacking elders, prompting people to jump off their own roofs, snatching and killing newborn babies with deadly bites, and stealing valuable from unsuspecting individuals. PETA activist Khushbu Gupta also points out the role of monkey poachers who trap baby monkeys found in forests and use them for begging or to provide entertainment. They release these monkeys once they grow up, but by then it's already tough for the monkey to adapt in urban settings. Even as authorities attempt to relocate monkeys to sanctuaries or sterilize them, experts stress the only long-term solution is to provide monkeys shelters with natural growing greenery in India's urban landscapes to allow the monkeys to independently sustain themselves. In India, many refuse to kill or harm a monkey because they believe it is a reincarnation of the Hindu god Hanuman.
Hanuman, he comes up a lot in the yoga, like the half split is the half Hanuman. And I gotta be honest with you, I hate the half split. My hamstrings are very tight, which is to say I'd be smoking monkeys left and right. We don't want to shoot the monkey. He's a representation of God. So you're going to let God take you out? You're going to let God eat your baby? Please. Please. Again, this is another story that would go different if it was in Texas. It would be a lot less about all the havoc these monkeys are wreaking to all of a sudden are monkeys extinct because we'd have to smoke them all. I'm also glad that like she started off talking about like primatologists and stuff like that, because I got to be honest, there was a different point in time where somebody did a news report about gangs of monkeys. They might not have been talking about monkeys. I needed to be exactly sure that we were actually talking about monkeys as opposed to, you know, us. I personally would not have enjoyed that. I mean, think about it. Like, Gabe, you listen to the phrasing of everything that went on before. And imagine a racist person saying it. You would not think he was talking about monkeys. You know, and they don't love us over there neither, right? So I was like, oh, no. But like, hold on. Monkey gangs. Do you have to, like, go through an intake process to join a monkey gang? Do they got to jump you into the monkey gang?
When you talk about a group of people that are hanging out together, a group of friends,
yeah,
they have been known to been referred to erroneously as a gang.
Oh, but listen to the way that she was talking about them, and they out here acting like gangs. Like apparently the monkeys are clicking up and they just roving through the neighborhood. And see, the thing with monkeys is, you know, because they are so like smart and relatively similar to humans, that we got all kinds of things in the popular culture landscape where we dress the monkeys up in certain ways, they put them in human sorts of conditions and situation. You remember Michael Jackson, he used to hang out with Bubbles. You know what I'm saying? Like we have personified monkeys in a whole lot of ways. Now I'm just imagining these monkeys with their rags, and they don't even need no gats. They just out here barehanding people. You know, they just out here just rough, man. I'm sorry. If we got a roving band of monkeys, man, I gotta move. Whatever neighborhood it is, streets ain't safe.
Have you seen the movie The Warriors?
Yes, it's been a very long time, but I've seen Warriors.
Yeah, this is like what's going on.
Yes, they're a monkey with the bottles. Click, click, click.
Got a bunch of rivaling gangs like roaming around Mumbai, like tearing up.
Snatching up babies. Nah, man, there would not be another monkey left in India if India was in Texas.
It is really sad, though, when you think about like the encroachment upon the, like the natural habitat, to the point where you see this happen in kind of like in other communities, like in Alaska, where the city is developing out and then someone's like, oh, I've got a bear in my front yard. Or why is this moose walking down the street? Well, because you knocked down his home like 2 miles that way. So he's looking for another place to go and he's looking for more food to eat, right?
Yeah, yeah. I ain't gonna lie. When they put that person on from PETA, I was kind of like, after hearing about all this hell that these monkeys was raising, my initial thought was, hey, man, I ain't really trying to hear from y'all right now. But then PETA was explaining how it is that the monkeys had become like this because of human mistakes. And I'm like, oh, OK, I'll allow it. I'll allow it. But nah. Sorry, PETA. You guys can't really be involved in the solution.
Yeah, someone's got to speak for the monkeys, right?
Monkey going to need to speak with that heat to his head. Sorry, man. There's no, we're not taking, what are we going to do? Take a monkey to trial? You know what I'm saying? What are we going to get the monkey a public defender? No. If you a gang of monkeys out here eating babies, all y'all got to go. Snuffed out. Sorry. I ain't feeling bad about it neither.
I see what you did with the public defender.
I'm just saying we want to make sure. My question is, given that the monkey's so damn advanced, is the monkey public defender a monkey who publicly defends? Just asking.
You know, these are the important questions in life, right? So,
yes.
All right, this next one comes from Tech.
Hello, my name is Reese Oxner, and I'm a news desk intern for NPR. We all know about Yelp. Many of us use it to find opinions on local restaurants or things to do. There are even reviews about national monuments on the platform. But now the company wants to help you avoid racist businesses as well. What it calls a firm stance against racism, Yelp will begin labeling businesses that were accused of racist behavior. This includes when the owner or employees use overtly racist slurs or symbols. And when I was looking on social media, I saw many praise the announcement, but also a lot of people were skeptical. How would this be enforced? Could it be abused? The company said it would only add this alert to a business page when there was resounding evidence of egregious and racist actions. Yelp also said the alert won't be based on the reviews themselves. It will require a news article from a credible media outlet. Yelp will provide a link to that article in the alert. The alert itself is overlaid on top of the reviews, and it has to be dismissed before you can read them. It's hard to miss. Yelp spokesperson told me that these alerts should be extremely rare. You can already find them live on the Yelp website. The law office of Aaron M. Schlossberg in New York was one of the first businesses that Yelp placed the alert on. Schlossberg went viral a couple years ago when he shouted a racist rant at employees at a Manhattan restaurant. They were speaking Spanish. He accused them of not being citizens, among other things. And for businesses, these reviews can really count. Back in 2011, a Harvard business researcher found that on average, each star can mean up to a 9% increase in revenue. Another study found that businesses without 5 stars could risk losing 12% of their customers. So at the end of the day, Yelp reviews can translate to a huge financial impact on businesses.
All I'm saying is, I mean, not that like these big businesses need my advice necessarily, right? But if I were the CEO of Cracker Barrel, I would try to get out in front of this and remind Yelp of their name before misunderstanding people flood the situation with what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just a thought I'd have. Cracker Barrel, you might want to get out in front of this. It's also wind up being a rude awakening to a whole lot of these people that have like racist knickknacks just kind of laying around. Because, you know, it's just a lot of places that like, you know, will have like one of the like them antiquated like blackface type things. Like when I was in Spain, for example, in Seville, there's a lot of like, hey, what's that? Like on the walls in places. And you'll still just kind of like stumble in and roll in somewhere in America and like see something on the wall and you kind of like, I don't know about this one. Whole lot of them folks ain't never thought about that one time and they gonna find out. They will indeed. But yeah, I guess I would appreciate knowing that somebody like referred to me by some racist slur. You know, the problem, though, where I would actually want this from Yelp, and this is where it would be difficult for, it's stuff like, why is my food taking so long? Why is nobody seating us yet? I walked in and you said that y'all didn't have no tables. And then somebody came in behind me. And then they got in. I walked in and you said there was a dress code. And then this white dude showed up in a t-shirt and flip-flops. And then he wound up coming into the spot. Like, those are the things that I want to know about. And those are the things that I think wind up being, like, far more important. And that's something that Yelp is not going to be able to track. What Yelp is going to be able to do something with is with like cartoonish extreme examples, because they say they needed to be quote unquote resounding. And Gabe, I'm pretty sure it's going to be white folks making the decision about what is and is not resounding. And if we have learned anything over time, it take a lot to resound with white folks. Like it's not like what would be resounding to me is still within the benefit of the doubt window for a lot of other people. So I'll be curious to see how it goes. But the example they gave of that dude who got all the people for speaking Spanish, that's so extreme as to almost be useless.
It's like you're going to have like multiple corroborating witnesses that you then approach a reporter who can write a story about multiple instances over a period of time. It's not just like I ordered guacamole on the side with my burrito on Friday.
Yeah.
I paid extra for it, but I didn't get it. And so I'm pissed now. Now I've got to hold on to that feeling and also have friends who have had the same experience.
Yes. I actually think that in order to make that work, they never do this. And maybe you just need a couple of white folks in the room, but that needs to be like wall to wall black folks. Because people don't understand. We have variants amongst ourselves about like how we see these things. And we do all know the dude. You know why he did that, right? Why he do that? You know why he did it. Why'd he do it? He did it because I was black. Dude, they ask everybody if you want ground pepper on your salad. Like, you might want to have, like, we can honestly give you all the answers you need on this, right? Because we don't like that guy so much either. You put seven of us in there, we'll be able to let you know way better than you could do without us. Trust me.
All right, this last story, the reporter couldn't join us for it, but I thought it was an interesting story, so we had to do it. And I just figured I'd give a little high level look at it. So in Boston and in Massachusetts overall, in Massachusetts, weed is legal there, legal to buy and sell weed. So there is a restaurant in Boston, it had a catering service. The catering service wasn't doing so well this year with the pandemic, all that sort of stuff. So they decided to start doing meals, like three course meals, kind of like Blue Apron style. Like you get this food and you cook it on your own, except they give you THC infused olive oil so that you can cook it on your own. They tell you where to add it, all that sort of stuff. It's about $80 for a three course meal for two people. I don't, you know, it's like an expensive night out, that sort of thing. But interested to hear your thoughts.
So what that sounds like to me is a company that sells infused olive oil, right? Like my understanding is that once you got the olive oil, like that's the secret sauce. I don't need your other stuff, but why not? If you them, why not?
So here's the thing about the infused olive oil is that they are not licensed as a dispensary in order to be selling it. So there is a law in Massachusetts that allows you to gift weed to someone else.
Yes.
This olive oil is technically a gift that's an add-on to the meal. So they get around it by being able to do that and just say, hey, this is a little, you know, special olive oil on the side. It's a gift.
Wise play. This is, hey, they doing it right, man. Like, I figured this was kind of the next level of it, right? Like as this goes and as it gets legal and you're in a place like Massachusetts, which has some fairly, you know, bourgeois environs and everything else, the next level is going to be figuring out how to like fully and properly indulge in this. So like you go to California, you go to the dispensaries and I mean, it's like going to Dylan's Candy Bar almost, you know, they got everything. Like Vlade Divac talked about when he came to the United States after being in communist Yugoslavia. He was like, okay, so the thing was, maybe we went to the store and they had chocolate that day. But if we went to the store and they had chocolate that day, it was just chocolate, right? He's like, but it come to America, we got milk chocolate, we got dark chocolate, we got chocolate with nuts in it, we got all these different things, right? That's what happened in California with legalization, is that once they got in there, like, you come from wherever you was at, hey, what do you buy? Weed. What kind?
Whatever they got.
Yeah, whatever they got, right? Like holding up to the light, you know, all this other stuff. Man telling you it's whatever it was. Like I say, it's like going to the liquor store. What you want? Drink? You know, like, there's just X's on the bottle. You know, like, that was what it was. In California, you go into these very legal establishments, and it's everything. It's bath bombs, right? It's oils. You got it. Like, it's got all this different stuff. And then you're going to see like the next level of it, stuff like that. Like, okay, so the cooking, for example, and then people are going to like bring it to your house in that way. Wise play on their part. Like, and to take it to a Blue Apron level, that's smart, especially in these quarantine times where don't nobody want to go to the grocery store.
Beep. Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So with all these injuries, these gruesome injuries happening, and I thought it might be a good time to do why I quit football, because people need to be reminded about how gruesome this game is. But also, there are people who just quit because they couldn't take it anymore. Not because they got injured, just because of a situation that they would like to forget, but they're comfortable enough with themselves to share it with us. Yep. So this first one comes from Ryan in Southeast Louisiana.
All right, Bo. I played high school football, 5A high school football in Southeast Louisiana. We were playing Lecture High School, which is where Jarvis Landry was playing. And I played offensive line. My running back fumbled the ball. I thought I had a perfect angle on old boy running up the sideline. And there at the end, his name escapes me at this moment. Ear hold me. My feet came off the ground. Mind you, I was damn near 300 pounds at the time. I walked the sideline to the bench, took my helmet off, and threw up. And that's when I was like, nah.
Damn, was that bad?
300-pounder. I wonder if he'd ever been ear-holed before.
Yikes, and it made him Earl. You know, that's head injury stuff. That's concussion stuff. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing we forget about with concussions, man. When a kid gets one, it's still a concussion.
Just like you were talking about before.
Yeah, yikes.
All right, this next one comes from Zink, South Carolina.
What's up, Bo? Final grades for my port card came out, and I ended up getting a D in Spanish. And my father had a rule where if you fail the class or get a D, you cannot play sports then the following year. So I get a D. I tell my father, Pops, you know, I'm going into freshman year of high school. I got to make a name for myself. I got to play football. He tells me, you know what? You're not playing. I say, well, I'm going to play. I don't care what you say. So I call myself wanting to be grown. So he tells me, you know what? Fine. He signs the permission slip. He says, you can go ahead and play if you get past me to turn in that permission slip. So I said, oh, this shouldn't have been a breeze. You know, my father done tore both his Achilles tendons. And I'm like, oh, he's 46 years old. I can get past him. You know, that's when I learned what old man strength was. Next thing I know, I'm on the ground holding my head. And he's like, you know, you can try this anytime you want. And that's when I realized it's time for me to hang it up and pick up the sticks and start playing drumline.
Yo, the best part is he could have got his grades right and tried it again next year. Nope. Lesson was learned. Oh my God. If you could get past me, why'd you even try? Like, I feel like that that didn't sound like a breeze at all.
I love the crossover that we get amongst all the different topics that we have, trying to like take out your pops.
Yes.
Why I quit football. Biggest lie ever told.
Yes. All of it right there. Every single bit.
All right. This last one comes from Aaron.
Hey, what's up, Bo? In my days as a player and as a coach, I have seen and heard all kinds of classic stories of people deciding that the game just wasn't for them anymore. So this is actually back when I was a player. We were conditioning. We used to have to run these 300s, which is basically pretty much a lap around the field. And our test was we had to do it in a certain amount of time, certain amount of reps. So it was 30 seconds rest. That was the test, 30 seconds rest. We had a young man that was coming in as a true freshman. And, you know, true freshmen come in. We don't ease them in. They jump in. You show up early, you do what we're doing. So I forget how many reps we had that day, to be perfectly honest with you. But it was just a routine day for us. But this young man decided, as he was coming around the last turn, to just keep going straight, ran straight to his car, and we never saw that boy again. He knew right then and there, if that was the way we was running, hit the game wasn't for him no more, bro.
All it took was a look. Oh, man. Hey, man. I applaud anybody. It's just like, it's always bad when you can't even say goodbye.
Can't go back.
Right. You're just like, nah, I'm just walking. I'm just like, I don't need to let it. Like, that is the equivalent of I ain't even going to go pick up my last check. All right. I can have it. I don't even need it. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassani, Christina Buswell, helping things behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Also, thank you to our sponsors. And thank you to our, if you haven't heard, contributors. Thanks to Shimani Joshi of Vice in Mumbai, India. Check out her story on Monkey Gang Wars. Yeah. Also, thanks to Reese Oxner of NPR. Check out his story on Yelp labeling businesses accused of racist behavior. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.